I've often heard people say that they have sweated blood over their message before they deliver it. And I wish I could say that over this Band-Aid on my lip, but it was carelessness. But thanks to Julie for having a Band-Aid, at least I got something here instead of a piece of white toilet paper. So, before we begin this morning, I want to introduce a new member to our congregation. A gal that I've known for many years. She's grown up in the church. Her parents and grandparents, and she used to attend the North Clackamas Church of God, and I think Mom's now at Holiday Park, Lynchwood now. And when I knew her first, her name was Charity, and she's changed her name over the years to Harmony. Still a wonderful name, and Harmony and Courtney, would you stand and... We want to welcome you to our congregation. Harmony is in the Master of Religion program at Warner Pacific and will be working with us as an intern, which now gives us three interns. We've got, my mind went back, Sarah. It's, Teresa would say it's the springtime of my senility. We have Sarah, and then we have Tim, and now we have Harmony. And Harmony will be working with Karen Osborne in the children's ministry, and also Ashley with the development of our women's ministry. So we're really looking forward to sharing, and she'll be working under the tutelage of, or the mentorship of Pastor John. So I'm sure that you've noticed that each year, almost all of the major news magazines put out a special issue of pictures and recalling people and events that made news during the previous year. And of course, this year, the events and the heroes of 2008 dominated the early January news reviews. Many of the magazines also included articles by experts predicting what they expect to see happening in the years ahead. Some even go so far as to predict 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, or even more in the future. In the past, a few of those predictions have proven amazingly accurate, while others could not be more wrong. For example, back in 1967, experts predicted that by the turn of the century, technology would have taken over so much work that we would see that the average work day or work week would only be 22 hours long, and that we would only work 27 weeks a year. As a result, one of our biggest problems would be then to decide what to do with all of our leisure time. Well, I don't know about you, but that prediction certainly missed the mark as far as my life is concerned. In fact, most of us seem to be very busy people. We're always in a hurry. We walk fast, we talk fast, we eat fast, and after we eat, all too often, we stand up and announce, "Excuse me, but I have to run." So here we are on the fourth Sunday of 2009. We just inaugurated Barack Obama as our 44th President of the United States. I wonder, what are we going to experience this year? What will we be saying next year at this time? Will we be as busy? Will we have made any better use of our time? In just 340 days, this year will be over. Just 11 months from the day, Christmas is here again. Kelly's been waiting for me to say that because I remind her all the time how soon Christmas and Easter are coming. Will we be looking at the future with anticipation? Will we be looking at the future with dread? Our scripture for the day is Ephesians 5, verses 15 through 17. And I believe that those scripture verses can be a help to us as we look forward to the rest of 2009. If we will listen to it, it will be helpful. And here is what it says. Be very careful, then, how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Now, the Apostle Paul presents some important lessons that we need to consider. Our first lesson is, our time on this earth is limited. First of all, we must be very careful how we live because our time on this earth is limited. The psalmist writes, "Show me, O Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting is my life." And then again, we hear, "The length of our days is 70 years or 80, if we have the strength. They quickly pass and we fly away." Now, I realize that some of you younger folk, 70 or 80 years may sound like a long, long time from now. In fact, I can remember vaguely back when I thought that anyone over 40 was ancient. But it's no longer that way. It's all rather relative, isn't it? For examples, teenagers in love talking together in the car or on my phone. An hour or two seems like a blink of the eye. But for mom or dad who's wondering what's going out there in the car, an hour or two seems like eternity. The psalmist also tells us to number our days so that we may develop a heart of wisdom. A few years ago, People magazine published an article entitled Dead Ahead. The article was telling us about a new clock that keeps track of how much time you have left to live. It calculates an average lifespan of 75 years for men and 80 years for women. So you program your sex and your age into the clock, and from then on, it will tell you how much time you have left to live. And it can be purchased for only $99.95. Now, I did not buy one, but it is an intriguing idea. In fact, this is what the psalmist told us to do, to number our days. Now, because 75 is only 8 years away, I decided that I would live to be at least 85 years old. And at that rate, I have 6,218 days left to live as of today. That's all. Just 6,218 days left to live. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. I do not have a guarantee of even one more day to live. Actually, the Bible tells us not to count on tomorrow, because tomorrow may not come for you or for me. All that we have is right now. So our time on this earth is valuable because it is limited. Now, the second thing that we learned from the scriptures today is to make the most of every opportunity. Second, Paul tells us that we must make the most of every opportunity. And he gives us a reason, because the days are evil. Now, Jesus said that Satan is a robber and a thief. And one of the things that he tries to rob from us is our time, because time is a very precious possession. Just think of the time wasted in sinning. Think of the time wasted in bars or in gambling casinos or in shallow affairs. Think of the time wasted in gossiping or spreading rumors. Think of all the time wasted worrying about the consequences of sins that we have committed. Satan is a thief and a robber. But it's not just sin that makes demands on our time. Sometimes even good things make demands on our time. Jesus went to the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And after Jesus entered the home, he sat down to teach. Mary was sitting at his feet, just soaking up every word he had to say. And meanwhile, Martha was in the kitchen preparing dinner. Now, you know the story. Martha gets upset because Mary is not in the kitchen. She complains to Jesus, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left all the work for me to do by myself? Tell her she has to help me." "Martha, Martha," Jesus answered, "are you worried and upset about many things? But only one thing is needed." Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, my question to you, was Martha sinning by fixing a meal in the kitchen? No, of course not. But here is the problem. She was so preoccupied with what she was doing that she did not realize that God was in her living room. Now, that's the same mistake that you and I make every day. We get so caught up in the here and the now that we fail to deal with the eternal. We fail to deal with the things that will last forever and ever. Richard Swenson is a medical doctor, and he wrote a book in which he discusses one of the major problems of our time, anxiety and stress. He calls it overload. Dr. Swenson says that people are just plain overloaded. One, we are overloaded with commitments. We have committed ourselves to go here and to go there, to take part in this activity and in that social function. And as a result, we soon begin meeting ourselves, coming and going, because we have overloaded ourselves in the area of commitments. Secondly, we are overcommitted with possessions. Teresa, don't listen to this. She's been preaching for 20 years for me to clean out the garage. We are overloaded with possessions. The doctor says our closets are full, our garages are overflowing, we have gone into debt to pay for all those things that we simply must have. Now we're so afraid that somebody will steal them from us, and we're that overloaded in the area of possessions. Thirdly, we are overloaded in the area of work. We get up early, we fight traffic, we experience intolerable working conditions because we have to if we're going to get paid so that we can pay for all those possessions that we have accumulated. There's also information overload. Now, he says that as a doctor, he has to read 220 articles a month just to keep up with all the changes in his profession. And then there's the internet, the information highway. But the problem is that we cannot possibly absorb it all. So we feel an overload in this area too. And I could go on and on and on and overload you some more. However, I'm sure that you're getting the picture. There are so many demands on our time, so many things that need to be done, but there are just 8,760 hours in this year, and we've already used up 587 of them. We do want to make the most of every opportunity. So what are we to do? Third point that Paul wants us to understand is to understand what the Lord's will is. To answer that, Paul tells us, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Now, what do you think the Lord's will is for your life in this new year? Do you think that he wants your mind so saturated with worries and anxieties that you cannot make spiritual thoughts? Do you think he wants your calendar so crowded that you do not have time for the important things? What do you think God's will is for you this year? I'm leaving a couple of suggestions for you to consider. First of all, establish your priorities. Now, I'm assuming, and sometimes that's bad, But I'm assuming that since you are in church this morning, that you believe God needs to be a part of your life. But when you begin to establish priorities, you have to decide just where he stands in your life. So ask yourself this question: who or what is most important in my life? Who or what is most important in my life? Now, I'm praying that you will say, who is most important in my life? It's God. And that my relationship with him through Jesus Christ is the most important thing in my life. If so, then put that at the top of your list of priorities and say, this will affect my decisions, my scheduling, my relationship with others, and my whole outlook on life. Therefore, when Sunday rolls around, neither rain nor shine nor football kickoffs will interfere with my being in church, because he comes first in my life. I will worship the Lord, and nothing will interfere with that. You also need to establish some definite time each day to pray and to read his word. Pray for yourself. Pray for your family. Pray for the people around you. Pray for the church. Pray for our nation. Pray for our missionaries. Sometimes they feel so alone and so far away. You will never know how much your prayers mean to them, but you will be blessed as you grow in your faith and in the trust in the Lord. And third, you must also spend time with your family. Every husband here, every boyfriend here, ought to have a date with his wife, or if you're single, your girlfriend. I'm serious. You ought to have a date night with your wife, a time when just the two of you can get away and not have anything else interfering. No beepers, no telephones, no interruptions, no kids. Teresa and I try once or twice a week to at least go out for dinner so we have an hour or so by ourselves that we can just talk and be together. It's important. Just talk. Maybe it's a nice restaurant. Maybe you're staying home and the kids are gone or whatever. Whatever it is, spend some time together. It's also important that you spend time with your children. They're growing up fast. These are precious moments. Don't let them get away. Make sure that you spend quality time with your children. Make sure that your family is very high on that list. Now, most of us have to work. And I believe that Christians need to be good workers. When someone hires a Christian, they ought to know that they're getting someone who will give them an honest day's work and not cheat them. Because we are Christians, we have a responsibility to the Lord to honor him even in the workplace. So here's my summary. Establish your priorities. Then learn how to live today. The two greatest enemies of time are regrets for the things that we did in the past and anxiety about what will happen to us in the future. Many of us are living either in the past or we're living in the future, but we are not living in the present. In fact, many of us are engaged in a little game of, I wish it were next week, or I wish it were next month, or something. Kids go to school and say, boy, I wish this day was over. Gary Freeman tells about a girl who went to college. She hated college. But she told herself, if I can get out of college and get married and have children, I know I will finally be able to enjoy life. So she stuck with it. She went to classes every day. She finally graduated from college. She got married, and she had children. She discovered that children are a lot of work. So she said to herself, if I can just get these kids raised, then I will be able to relax and to really enjoy life. But about the time that the kids were entering high school, her husband said, "Guess what? We don't have enough money to send our kids to college. I guess you'll have to get a job." Well, she didn't want to go to work, but she knew he was right, and they did need the money, so she went to work. She hated her job, but she told herself, "If I can just get these kids out of college and get all of the bills paid, then I can quit and really enjoy life." Finally, the last child graduated from college. All the bills were paid, and she walked into her employer's office and said, "I quit." He said, "Oh, you can't quit right now. If you stay with us just another 8 years, you will have a pension for the rest of your life." She thought, "Well, I do not want to work another 8 years, but there is all the money there, and I really cannot turn down the opportunity." So she worked another 8 years. Finally, she and her husband retired at the same time. They sold their home, and they bought a little retirement cottage. There they sat on their swing on their front porch. They looked at the family picture albums and dreamed about the good old days. Someone said, "Life is what happens to you while you're making plans to do something else." True, isn't it? Life is what happens to you while you're making plans to do something else. Another year has come, another year has gone, a new year stretches before us. Help us, Lord, to redeem the time so that we can have a happy new year. During this year, may you have enough happiness to keep you sweet, enough trials to keep you strong, enough sorrow to keep you human, enough hope to keep you happy, enough failure to keep you humble, enough success to keep you eager, enough friends to give you comfort, enough wealth to meet your needs, enough enthusiasm to help you look forward to tomorrow, and enough determination to make each day better than the day before. Lord, help us to use our 8,760 hours this year the wisest we can for you and for your glory. And in conclusion, Romans 13:11-12 tells us, "The hour has come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put away the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light." How are you going to spend your hours the rest of this year?